At a distance of 80 yards, across five sets of rails converging into the station, Cleveland Phelps watched through a gap in a board fence as the engineer and fireman stepped down and ambled away from the short train. On the other side, he saw the two deputies following Briley Barnes and Kate McCorkle across the rail yard.
It's Barnes, that lousy little peckerwood, and sweet Kate McCorkle. Now, what do you suppose she's carrying in that bundle?
You're going to let them all get inside? If JT is in there, it's going to put him in a bad spot once the shooting starts.
Exactly. How often in life does a man get to kill everybody he'd like to kill at one time?
Two Jack Roth eased the rear door of the Pullman car open and slipped inside. His pistol was out and cocked. Once he reached the long drapes, Two Jack parted them slightly with his hand and peeped through. He saw Sim sitting across the table from J.T. Priest, and he noted the cuffs on Priest's wrist.
Freeze, Sims!
Without turning to face him, Quick Charlie raised his hands, the pistol hanging on his thumb by the trigger guard.
Is that you, Roth? Been wondering what's been taking you so long.
From the front end of the car, the door flew open and Sullivan Hart filled the doorway, his pistol also drawn and cocked.
I've got it, Sully.
Roth stepped forward and snatched the pistol off Sims's thumb.
Now, wasn't that easy? Gentlemen, meet your new prisoner, Mr. Tuck Priest. Tuck, this is Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth. They'll be hosting your trip back to Fort Smith.
Shut up, Sims.
Sully, bring in Barnes and the woman.
All right, both of you, come in here.
Sims craned his neck, looking past Briley Barnes as Barnes stepped aside. When Kate McCorkle came in with the blanket full of money under her arm, Sims slumped.
Oh, no. Kate, you were supposed to be out of this.
Charlie, you all right? I couldn't leave you that way, Charlie. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, there's that lousy toot-timing.
Two Jack Roth shut him up, tapping his barrel on Priest's forehead.
The least you say, the better right now. J.T. Priest, you're under arrest for murder by the authority of Judge Charles Isaac Parker, the Western District Federal Court.
Listen, Sully, you gotta let her go, please. I didn't count on her showing up. Kate's got nothing to do with any of this. It's too dangerous, her being here.
We'll get it sorted out, one thing at a time.
Hart moved to the bar, taking Barnes by the sleeve, pulling him and Kate McCorkle with him.
You two stand right here and keep your hands in sight.
You don't understand, Sully. I cut the caboose from the train to let a gunman named Red Loman get away so he could telegraph Mad Dog Mabry. You wanted Los Pistoleros. I've been bringing them to you, but by now, Mabry sent gunmen here. This is no place for a woman.
I beg your pardon?
The caboose? You're the one who left sitting on the tracks with a man in it?
Yeah, I did. I figured he'd wake up. I brightened the lantern so it wouldn't cause a wreck. Look, you gotta get her out of here.
Settle down, Sims.
Sullivan Hart moved to the table and looked down at the folded paper. He opened it, read it, then refolded it.
See? Priest confessed to the bank robbery in Crete. I'm innocent. Now get Kate out of here, Sully, for God's sakes.
That paper doesn't mean a thing. He held a gun to my head and made me sign it. To hell with this. Take me to Fort Smith. I'll get some lawyers. We'll see who goes to jail.
Sullivan Hart dropped the folded paper back on the table. Then, his eyes caught the string of dried ears. Priest's face turned stark white as Hart lifted the string on the tip of his pistol barrel and leveled the pistol on Priest's forehead. Roth saw the dark resolve in Hart's face, and he took a step away from J.T. Priest.
Don't do it, Sully. Not here. Not like this. We're deputies, not executioners.
Parker said, dead or alive, it's my choice.
Sims felt something sharp sting his shoulder.
Get out!
Sims dove into Kate and Briley Barnes. Sims shoved Kate and Briley Barnes along the floor and around behind the bar.
Damn it, Kate! Why didn't you do like I asked?
I wanted to help, damn you!
How many?
How half a dozen, maybe more.
Roth moved forward, dragging Priest and the big chair with him. He took up position at the row of broken windows.
We can't let them rush us in these tight quarters. We've got to get some room. We need rifles.
Crouched behind the express wagon, Cleveland Phelps reloaded his rifle, casting a glance at Clifford Mallory.
Why didn't you wait until we got right up? We could have moved in and been done with it.
I saw him through the window, pointing a pistol in this direction. I figured he'd seen us.
Damn it, he was pointing it at Priest. He was probably arresting him.
As Cleveland Phelps spoke, Raymond Cloud nudged him from the other side.
Look at what's coming here. We've got a constable waving a billy bat.
Then shoot him. The police have no business butting in here.
See, that's how you deal with these damn policemen.
Hart looked out the window and saw a rifleman rise up from the pile of scrap iron, aiming his rifle. Hart's shot hit Max Dupree an inch above his ear. At the other end of the broken windows, Roth swung into view long enough to catch Jake Walls rise up. Roth's shot hit him dead in the chest and lifted him backward, Walls' rifle flying out of his hands. Behind the bar, Quick Charlie Sims stripped off his coat and threw it over Kate McCorkle's huddled shoulders.
Barnes, keep her down. Anything happens to her, I'll kill you.
Charlie, what are you doing?
I gotta draw him out. Give Roth and Hart something to shoot at. If they hit us all at once, we're dead.
No, Charlie, don't!
Sims was already crawling through broken glass over to where Sullivan Hart stood pressed against the wall.
Get back, Sims!
Both of you, reload! Hurry up!
What are you doing, Sims? Get yourself back behind the bar!
No! Get reloaded! I can draw them out for you.
You'll get yourself killed! Now stay down, Sims!
Wish me luck.
Nah! Don't!
Quick Charlie Sims charged across the floor up onto the green felt table. His foot only touched the tabletop long enough to hurl himself through the window. He hit the ground rolling, then sprang to his feet, running in a zigzag, charging into the blazing rifles. Closing in fast on the short pile of scrap iron, Sims saw a rifleman rise up, taking aim from 20 yards. The shot hit Sims in the ribs, sending him veering once more, but he still managed to continue racing forward. Sims saw one rifleman fall backward, a bullet from one of the deputies hitting him in the chest. Another rifleman spun in a circle before he fell down into the scrap iron.
We got three men down.
Phelps spoke to Raymond Cloud and Clifford Mallory.
Let's get to the horses and get the hell out of here.
On the other side of the high mound of scrap metal, Sims tumbled and rolled downward. He lay there, dazed and bleeding. At the end of the fence, Otis Farnsworth still stood holding the horses. And upon seeing Sims, he jerked his pistol from his holster and pulled the horses forward.
You're finished, Quick Charlie!
Sims lay back against the fence. His legs had all but stopped working now. He raised a hand to his heaving chest and felt the warm blood running from the wound in his ribs.
Bring the horses, Otis!
Otis ran along the fence with the string until Cleveland Phelps and Raymond Cloud were close enough to snatch their reins from his hand. Behind him, Clifford Mallory hurried along, struggling with his brother's arm across his shoulders.
Get him mounted!
Otis ran forward with the rest of the horses and helped Clifford shove Harvey up onto his saddle. Sims watched as Sullivan Hart sailed out from the train and jumped atop another mound. He pounded away, following the other riflemen that had been shooting at the train. Against the fence, Quick Charlie Sims felt himself fading.
That was a stupid thing to do.
But then he smiled faintly. At least Kate was safe, and that was all that mattered now. He batted his eyes and tried to keep them focused, but the loss of blood caused the tool yard before him to tilt back and forth like the deck of a tossing ship. Something moved toward him from across the yard. What was it? Not one of the gunmen, he hoped. Sims struggled with his blurred vision. As if through a darkening tunnel, he watched the two big mongrel watchdogs slowly come closer.
Oh. So many dogs.
They stalked forward like dark beasts called forth from a nightmare. Police had converged on the rail yard from all directions, some running on foot, others arriving in a horse-drawn paddy wagon. Among the officers gathered in a firing line surrounding the train, three railroad bulls stood with shotguns, their neckties flapping in the wind. A man in a long wool police coat uniform stood behind a cooperage barrel with a hand raised in the air.
You in there? Are you gonna give yourselves up? There's two men dead out here. It doesn't have to happen to the rest of you.
I'm a federal deputy with prisoners in here. One of them is Briley Barnes. You have a warrant on him. We brought him back to you. Those two men were gunmen trying to kill us.
If you're telling the truth, throw out your weapons and surrender. We'll hash it all out.
Two Jack Roth looked over at Kate McCorkle and Briley Barnes, who crouched low and moved across the car toward him. He motioned them down, and they dropped to the floor. Cringing, the big chair clutched to his chest. J.T. Priest lay with a trickle of blood running down his forehead, where a sliver of flying glass had nicked him.
We're coming out! But don't let anybody go free until you've talked to Judge Charles Isaac Parker in Fort Smith. Is that a deal?
Yes. You have my word, sir.
Captain Bennington looked toward the two railroad bulls who held their shotguns at port arm.
One false move, gentlemen. You have permission to blast this bird out of his boots.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Captain. Two of them escaped from the car about the time we showed up. They both took off in that direction. Some of your men followed them.
Real good. They won't get very far.
Captain Bennington turned back to the Pullman car and saw two Jack Roth lay his pistol on the window ledge. Soon after, Kate McCorkle and Briley Barnes stepped down out of the car, handcuffed together. Behind them, two Jack Roth walked out, carrying the chair with J.T. Priest still handcuffed to it. The police captain waved a cautious hand, motioning his men forward. He looked to Jack Roth up and down as the big deputy stood there in his Western Trail clothes. An empty holster belt swung low on his right hip, the leather wells of his high-topped moccasins reaching high up his calves, his long black hair hanging down past his broad shoulders. Behind the half-open front of Roth's shirt, the captain spied the bandage from Roth's wounds at Little Red Spring.
I can't wait to hear what this is all about.
Raymond Cloud looked back as the four horses turned the corner.
We got one on our tails! Then shoot the son of a bitch!
Riding on, Raymond Cloud and Clifford Mallory turned in their saddles with their pistols drawn.
I'll break off and get him!
Before reaching the next corner, Cloud cut away from the others. He gigged his horse toward the sidewalk, then jumped it over a short stone wall. Hart saw Cloud spin his horse to a halt and yank a rifle from its saddle boot. He cut his horse straight for Cloud and made the same jump. He quickly pulled his pistol. The first shot caught Raymond Cloud high across his shoulder. He dropped down out of sight behind a rain barrel.
Come and get me, law dog!
Give yourself up! It's over!
Suddenly, Cloud made a run for the front door of a small row house. He battered in the front door and ran inside. Hart leapt off his horse and ran towards the door.
Stop right there!
Cloud froze at the top of the stairs, then spun around with his rifle.
Damn you!
Cloud tried to move up the stairs backwards while levering around into his rifle. Hart raised his pistol. While Two Jack stood with his hands raised chest high, relating to Police Captain Douglas Bennington a shortened version of what had happened and why, paddy wagon came in from the front of the rail station and rolled to a halt alongside the bullet-pocked Pullman car. Police uniforms swarmed in and out of the car. Sergeant Duffy stepped in close to the captain, holding out the string of dried ears looped on his finger.
Begging your pardon, Captain, sir, but we found these lying on the floor. What do you make of it?
My God, man.
Captain Bennington turned slowly to 2 Jack Roth with a look of stunned disbelief.
Is this?
Yes, Captain. Those are human ears.
He nodded toward J.T. Priest, still handcuffed to the large chair.
This man collects them.
Roth pointed at one of the pairs of ears, less dried and blackened than the others.
Those two belong to my partner's father. That's why we're here. This man killed him.
That's a damn lie! I never seen him before! You have no right taking me into custody! I want a lawyer!
A lawyer, huh?
That's right! I'm a born American citizen, and I have rights that must be adhered to!
Here! Adhere to this! How dare you ask for a lawyer? You come in here like some Wild West show shooting up my city?
Judge Parker will verify everything I've been telling you, Captain. I only ask that you hear from him before turning this man loose.
Don't worry, Deputy Roth. Nobody's turning anybody loose, including you, until we get to the bottom of this. Fair enough?
Fair enough, Captain.
Captain, here comes Yancey, O'Leary, and Tate. They've apprehended one of them.
Through the parting crowd of onlookers, 3 patrolmen carried Quick Charlie Sims between them. Blood running down Sims' chest, his head hanging limp and bowed.
Give him some room!
Duffy moved in and helped the officers lay Sims down on the ground.
Charlie, oh my God!
Kate McCorkle rushed forward before anyone could stop her, dragging Briley Barnes with her like a rag doll.
Charlie, please, don't die. Please, don't die.
Get him on a gurney, then load him on the wagon. Get him to the hospital. Step lively, lads. This man is bleeding to death on us.
Sergeant Duffy pulled Kate away from Sims, Briley Barnes staggering back with her, as 2 officers came running in from the paddy wagon carrying a canvas gurney between them.
Can somebody please uncuff me from her?
You shut up, boy. We found your name on our warrant list.
Bennington turned back to Officer Yancey, one of the men examining Charlie.
How bad is he? Where'd you find him?
He's lost a lot of blood, Captain. We found him over yonder in the tool yard.
The tool yard? Good Lord. And the dogs must have done all that to him.
No, sir, Captain. He's been shot, but he's not dog bit. He tried running through that lead storm. We saw it all.
Why did he do a full thing like that?
You'd have to know him, Captain. He's a strange one. He said it would cause them to get up and give us a shot at them. He was right. It did.
And the dogs never touched him?
No, sir, they didn't.
I'm surprised those 2 mongrel devils didn't eat the man alive. They've torn up their share of prowlers in the past.
I know, sir.
Behind Yancey, the officers loaded Sims into the paddy wagon.
But the dogs are what took us so long to bring him in. They wouldn't let us near him. He finally came to long enough to call them off of us. They seem to be guarding him, Captain. Lunging against the fence at us. I never saw anything like it.
That's my Charlie, all right? All animals love Charlie Sims. Dogs, horses, you name it. He just has a way with any dumb animal, I suppose.
It took over an hour and a half for the uniformed police, along with 2 plainclothes inspectors and the railroad security agents, to go through the train. They impounded the blanket full of money Kate McCorkle had stashed behind the bar, along with the string of ears and the crates of explosives in the car surrounding the big safe. The money and the string of ears now lay in a box at Captain Bennington's feet, along with J.T. Priest's big Colt pistol. When a freight wagon backed up to the car door and workers from the station began unloading the small crates of dynamite, Captain Bennington turned to J.T. Priest.
What's in the safe that's so important you'd rather blow up the whole train than have it found?
I never saw that safe before in my life.
Sergeant Duffy reached out and slapped Priest roughly on the back of his head.
Don't lie to the captain.
It's all right, Sergeant Duffy. We'll see for ourselves what's in that safe once the dynamite is cleared away.
From a block away, Sullivan Hart limped forward, leading his horse behind him. The body of Raymond Cloud lay across the horse's saddle. At a distance of 12 feet, Bennington raised the pistol in his hand.
Stop right there. Raise your hands.
As the patrolman moved in around him, Captain Bennington lifted the pistol from Hart's holster and then snatched the bottle of beer from his hand.
A beer?
I stopped at a tavern. They wouldn't give me any water. I'm Federal Deputy Sullivan Hart, here under the authority of Judge Parker's Federal Court, Western District.
We've already heard who you are, Deputy.
Captain Bennington glanced at the body hanging over the saddle.
What about the rest of them?
I had to let them get away. The way they were shooting, I didn't want to risk the lives of your citizenry by chasing them further into the city.
Good thinking. We'll catch them sooner or later.
I doubt it. My bet they're headed out of here. I don't think this is one of their usual haunts.
So much the better.
Captain Bennington shoved Hart's pistol down in his coat pocket.
It's my duty to take your weapon, young man. Don't worry, though. You'll get it back if everything checks out.
I understand. How's my partner and the others?
Everybody's fine, except the man who took a jump through the window. He shot up pretty bad.
That's Quick Charlie Sims. He did a crazy thing there.
Charlie Sims? That name sounds familiar. I think I've heard of him.
I wouldn't be surprised, Captain. Everybody seems to know Quick Charlie.
One full week after the shootout had taken place, Judge Charles Isaac Parker stepped down from a train at the Chicago train station. Deputy Daniel Slater made the trip with him in order to assist in escorting J.T. Priest back to Fort Smith. They were met by Captain Bennington and two of his men as soon as they stepped down from the train.
Judge Parker, I'm Captain Lowell Bennington at your service. I'm in charge while our police commissioner's out of town. This is indeed an honor, sir, even under the circumstances. My men and I admire your reputation for, sir.
My reputation for hanging criminals, of course. I also teach Sunday school and coach team sports. I hope they admire that as well.
Oh, yeah. If they knew about it, I'm certain they would. At any rate, it's a pleasure meeting you.
Likewise, I'm sure.
As you requested, Your Honor, we've kept your coming here quiet to avoid the newspaper reporters.
Good, Captain. What did the newspaper say about the incident?
It wasn't as bad as you might expect, Your Honor. The main headline read, "Outlaws hold railway station at bay." Then it gave the details, most of them true.
Then I'm glad my deputies didn't cause you too much trouble, Captain.
Judge Parker gestured toward Daniel Slater.
This is Deputy Daniel Slater.
Captain Bennington and his men introduced themselves to Slater. Then Bennington stepped closer to the deputy and extended both hands.
I'm afraid I'll have to ask for your shotgun, Deputy Slater. It's illegal to carry a deadly weapon out in public here.
What if I just put it under my coat, then?
I'm sorry, but I'm afraid it's also illegal to carry a concealed deadly weapon here.
Wait a minute. Then how the hell does a fella carry his deadly weapon here?
Don't argue, Daniel. Just give him the shotgun. I'm certain you won't be needing it while we're here.
All right, Your Honor. Sounds like Harden Roth could have used one the other day.
Slater handed the shotgun to Captain Bennington, who in turn passed it on to one of his men.
What's that, Daniel? Speak up, man.
Nothing, Your Honor. Just thinking out loud.
Slater cinched his knee-length blanket coat across his middle, hoping to hide the big Colt 45 strapped to his hip and the smaller double-action Colt Thunderer riding in a shoulder harness up under his arm. One of the men started to make a note of the pistols, but Captain Bennington raised a hand.
Out of sight, out of mind, eh, Deputy?
We're gonna get along, you and me. I can see that already.
On the way to the station house in a covered two-horse carriage, Captain Bennington took a paper bag from underneath his seat and handed it to Judge Parker.
Deputy Roth asked me to give these to you in private. They're ears, Your Honor. Two of them belong to Sullivan Hart's father, I believe. Deputy Roth said you know what to do with them. Apparently, he didn't want Hart to see them again.
Yes, thank you, Captain. We'll bury him.
Judge Parker passed the paper bag to Slater with no further comment on the subject. Captain Bennington discussed what had happened and talked at length about Los Pistoleros. At the end of the ride, the carriage pulled off the cobblestone street into a dirt alley beside the brick station house.
It all sounds rather incredible, but I suppose it was bound to happen any time. East meets west, crime-wise, so to speak. I wish there was more our department could do to help, but given our limited jurisdiction, and as elusive as these men are, I'm afraid your men are on their own.
My men are used to that, unfortunately. What about this Briley Barnes my deputies have mentioned? Have you learned anything from him?
Your Honor, Briley Barnes was only wanted on a simple petty theft charge. Yesterday, his employer posted a bailment bond on his behalf. He's gone, sir. It's doubtful he'll even show up for court next week.
Yes, bailment. I'd almost forgotten there's such a terrible practice. But perhaps it doesn't matter. We have one of the leaders in custody, the one who killed my deputy. That's not a bad day's work. We'll manage to get the others somehow.
Will only the two of you be transporting the prisoner back to Fort Smith?
No, we made arrangement with the Pinkertons. They're sending a couple of guards along.
Not that it's necessary.
When the judge, Slater, and Captain Bennington were settled in Bennington's office, Sullivan Hart and Two Jack came down from a police dormitory upstairs and joined them.
Well, how they treating you here, boys?
We're fine.
You know us, Your Honor. We always make do. Sorry you had to make this trip, sir.
Oh, nonsense, Deputy. I didn't have to come here. This could have all been handled by wire, but I wanted to come here, air out the old robe, so to speak. Captain Bennington, you have the confession J.T. Priest made on Charlie Sims' behalf?
Yes, Your Honor, right here.
Captain Bennington picked up the battered paper from his desk and passed it over to Judge Parker. The judge only glanced at it before he folded it and put it inside the lapel pocket of his swallowtail coat.
Aren't you going to read it, Your Honor?
Later, perhaps. Would you please excuse us, Captain?
Yes, of course. I need to speak to some of my officers anyway.
The fact is, this confession means little in and of itself. But this, along with your reports, prompted me to speak to the authorities in Creed on Mr. Sims' behalf. Suffice it to say, Sims has been exonerated of all charges, unless you choose to arrest him for horse theft, that is.
No, Your Honor. For all Sims' aggravation and trickery, he did help us out a lot. He'll be glad to hear this. Will you be going with us to visit him at the hospital, Your Honor?
No, and don't be too hasty in telling Sims he's off the hook just yet. I only want you two to know he's a free man. I don't want him knowing it yet.
Oh?
Deputies, I've been passing along all the information you sent to me about this gang of plunderers to the highest source in Washington. The name William Marbury has come up in several Senate investigations. I'm talking about bank fraud. Bank robbery, large-scale gun run into a foreign government, misallocation of government funds for purchase of beef, you name it, William Marbury and his friends have been in on it. The government wants these men stopped. And since you two are already nipping at their heels, Washington has agreed that you're the man to do it.
But, Your Honor, we had no experience in investigating something this large. We track and grab. This was just something we hooked into. Most of this happened because Sims let us do it.
Exactly. And if it takes Sims to get this done, hire him, threaten him, do whatever it takes. My last wire from Washington tells me that something has already made a chink in Marbury's armor. Two officials in the Bureau of Indian Affairs have come forward willing to testify against this so-called Midwest Investment Corporation. So apparently something you or Sims has done is starting to dry up Marbury's cash flow. Without money to buy people, this man will fall. I want you two to be the ones who'll make it happen.
We'll do our best, Your Honor. But this is going to take some time and money. We had to pawn our rifles to get here.
Does $100,000 sound adequate? Because it's within my power to confiscate that amount. The money you found on this Miss McCorkle you told me about in your report, I believe it to be stolen, don't you?
But we have no proof.
Proof is a word we might as well forget for now. I want to see results. We'll sort through the proof when the time comes. Whatever money is left in your expense account, she can claim when it's over. If the money turns out not to be stolen, I'll reimburse what we've spent catching these scoundrels.
Well, this is gonna be a hard blow to Sims and the woman.
Make it work, deputies. If Sims balks on it, tell him it's coming straight from the hanging judge. Tell him I said there's more than one way to hang a man.
An hour later, after Judge Parker and Deputy Slater left to meet the Pinkerton guards and pick up J.T. Priest, two Jack and Sullivan Hart walked along the cobblestone street toward the hospital.
This case must have some awfully big eyes on it if his source in Washington is pushing it.
Well, there's no question that his source in Washington is the president himself. I reckon the president wouldn't be asking for help if he didn't need it. My question is, where do we start?
I say one of us needs to pay a visit to that labor contractor, Hughes and Lindsay. Since we don't have Briley Barnes to show us around the way we wanted him to, I might as well look them up and do some snooping around on my own. I can do that while you're breaking the bad news to Sims and Kate McCorkle.
Thanks. I hate facing Sims with this. Why couldn't we just ask him for his help?
Parker didn't want to chance Sims turning us down.
Yeah, but still. Maybe we ought to search for this Hughes and Lindsay company together. How will you even know where to start?
If I can track men in the mountains and the Badlands, I think I'll be all right tracking skunks in the streets of Chicago.
They stopped and stood on a street corner a block from the hospital.
I feel wrong lying to Quick Charlie. Wish the judge hadn't asked me to do it.
Follow your conscience, Sully. I'll back your play whichever way you go with it.
I'll see how it goes when I get there. Good luck, Rolf. Watch your back out there.
You too, Sully.
For the past 4 days, Quick Charlie Sims had been laying in the hospital, recovering from the surgeries that had been required to remove the bullets from his battered body. Kate McCorkle had been at his side throughout it all. Had things gone the way Sims planned, he would be waiting for William Marbury when Marbury got here. But Kate had spoiled his plans, heading this way when she should have gone south and stayed out of things.
Okay, so there are a few minor setbacks.
He didn't like working from a hospital bed, but for now it was the best he could do. Sims had every intention of taking care of William Marbury right here in Chicago, then being back in Fort Smith when J.T. Priest made his escape from Parker's jail. And there was no doubt in Sims' mind that Priest would try to escape. That's what the $500 was for, the money he'd shoved down into Priest's pocket before the shooting had started. Quick Charlie Sims wasn't through with Los Pistoleros yet. Not by a long shot. With a pillow beneath his head, Sims lay adrift in the bed, reworking his plans in his mind.
Charlie, are you asleep?
Oh, no, Kate, no. Just thinking.
Those people are still out in the hall, Charlie. They're really getting on the guard's nerves.
They caused any problems?
No, but he seems nervous anyway.
Did you tell him I'm doing fine?
Yes, but do they understand English, Charlie? I mean, they all huddled real close to me, then just stared as if I wasn't there.
How close?
I don't know, just close.
Come here, Kate.
Kate stepped closer and watched his hand reach down into her dress pocket. Sims took out a deck of playing cards and a small ball of silk string with a long hat pin stuck in it.
There, good.
He reached into her other dress pocket and took out a pocket knife and a folded $1 bill.
I mean, real good, Charlie. I know because I'm good myself and I didn't feel a thing. But why? What's this all for?
Just their way of showing they care.
Sims took the hat pin from the ball of string. He put the pocket knife and the hat pin under his pillow. and handed the dollar bill to Kate McCorkle and played out a few inches of string.
The idea is, I should be able to get anywhere in the world with a dollar in my pocket. If I can't, I don't deserve to.
Charlie smiled up at her, tying a quick series of complicated knots in the length of string.
They'll go away when you give this to them. It tells them that my fingers and mind are working. Lets them know I'm all right.
What are they, Charlie? Gypsies? Are they all pickpockets?
They're Roma, Kate. And no, they're not all pickpockets. That's just Uncle Breldy, some of his family. They're silversmiths, but they're real good at moving things around unseen. Comes from years of persecution, I suppose.
Uncle Breldy.
Kate studied the knots in the silk string. Then she put the string in her pocket.
Are they your family, Charlie? All the time I've known you, you've never talked about your relations.
They're not my family. They're old friends of my family. My family's been dead for years.
But I always thought your family was from New York or New Jersey or somewhere back east.
Well, my folks lived all over. I could never sit still for long. They were wanderers, Kate. It's where I get it from.
Sometimes I look at you, Charlie, and read you like a book. And other times I wonder if I've ever known you at all.
You know me better than anyone else does, Kate. Maybe there's not much to know. Did you manage to put the rest of the money in a safe place? The other 200,000?
Yes, it's,
Don't tell me where. It's your money. I just wanted to know you still got it.
Yes, I'm in good shape, Charlie. There, does that help you make your plans?
Sims only smiled without answering. Kate walked back out in the hall and a few yards past the guard to where the small group of people sat on the floor. An elderly man with a long gray beard, three elderly women in long dresses, and a younger woman with a child on her hip stood up and gathered around her again.
Whoa, now, Uncle Breldy? Charlie asked me to show you this.
Kate held the small ball of string out to the old man, who stood short and powerful in his high-collared fur coat, his face nearly hidden beneath the brim of a battered derby hat. But instead of taking the string from her, he examined the knots. The others leaned in, doing the same. Then the old man looked up at Kate with a smile of satisfaction, ran his thumb and finger along the string, and he watched Kate's eyes widen in astonishment as the knots disappeared. Uncle Breldy nodded to the others as Kate stood staring at the length of string.
Charlie, he is doing well.
Without another word, each Roma filed past her in turn, smiling and nodding, the bottom edge of Uncle Breldy's fur coat almost brushing the floor as he passed her. Kate stood with the length of string hanging from her hand as they moved away along the hall. Coming from the opposite direction, Sullivan Hart turned to look the Roma up and down as they passed him. With his battered Stetson in his hand, Sims walked up to Kate McCorkle, gesturing his hat back down the hall.
Who are they?
Just some old acquaintances of Charlie's.
How's he doing?
He's coming along. He's asleep right now. Did the judge get here this morning?
Yep, he's here.
Well, what did he say?
Hart ignored her and moved towards Charlie's room. Kate followed him past the police guard at the door and into the room.
Is everything all right, Hart?
No, Miss McCorkle. I'm afraid not.
The sound of their lowered voices caused Sims to stir and open his
eyes. What's not all right,
Sully? Judge Parker is reviewing your case, Sims. So far, you're still not off the hook for the bank robbery or shooting the
guard. Even with the confession? Even with me bringing Priest to
you? Sorry, Sims. He says it looks better for you, but he wants your help bringing down the rest of this gang. He won't clear things up for you in Colorado till it's done, and that's
that. Well, I've done all I can to clear myself. Looks like I'm headed back to jail.
What? You'd rather go face a hanging than help us?
Yep. You are not a good liar, Sully, so don't try me. Come back when you practice some.
I saw those gypsies out there, Sims. This thing between you and JT Priest, it goes back further than the banking creed, doesn't it? I heard a story about a band of gypsies Priest killed years ago. He took their ears, same way he took my father's.
You stop right there, Sully. There are things I don't talk about. Now, if you're asking me if I'm one of the Roma gypsies, that's none of your business. If you're asking me if I'm looking for revenge on Priest and Mabry for something more than the robbery and creed, well, let's put it this way. A gypsy never admits vengeance, even to himself.
Okay, Sims, if we have to talk in circles about it, here's the truth. Listen close. You got out of that bed and left. Legally, there's not a thing I can do about it. In fact, there might even be a letter in my pocket right now signed by Judge Parker saying you're a free man. Two Jack Roth and I are going to stay on Los Pistoleros trail until we put them out of business. Care to help us?
Of course. There now, Sully, was that so hard to do?
It was evening, rain slanting in on a blowing wind, when Two Jack Roth looked up at the sign that read,
Hughes and Lindsay.
The sign was located in the second floor window of a large crumbling brick building. The building stood amid the smaller faded buildings and loading docks on the south side of town. For the past 3 hours, Roth had been asking directions to the place, but none of the shopkeepers he approached had ever even heard of Hughes and Lindsay. Finally, he'd asked an old Italian pushing a peddler's cart. The old man repeated the names Hughes and Lindsay to himself and came up with nothing. But then he tapped his forehead and searched through his ragged coat. He took out a thin, worn business index, leafed through it, and held it out for Two Jack Roth to read. Roth had thanked him and walked away in the direction of the old man's pointing finger. 3 blocks later, he'd spotted Briley Barnes walking in the same direction across the street. Roth had stayed back and began following him. That had been an hour ago, and now, having seen Briley Barnes just go through the doorway of the building, Roth read the sign above the door. It read,
Southside Men's Athletic Club.
Beneath the peeling letters, the caricature of a muscular arm flexed itself to the street. Inside the main entrance, Two Jack tried the knob on a dirty glass door with Hughes and Lindsay stenciled on it. The door was locked.
Of course.
Two Jack turned and walked along a littered hallway toward a pair of double doors.
Hold it there!
A short, wiry man in a plaid English wool cap stopped Roth inside the double doors.
Are you a fighter or a spectator?
When Roth only stared at him, the man looked him up and down, taking in Roth's thick neck, broad chest, and shoulders.
Dumb question. Sign in with my man at ringside.
But instead of walking over to where a rope lay spread out in a wide circle on the floor, Roth moved up into a gathering of men, stood for a moment looking all around for Briley Barnes. He finally spotted Barnes standing at the front of the crowd, shaking rain from his waist-length wool jacket. Roth smiled to himself and edged forward through the spectators, stopping right behind Barnes. He grabbed him by the shoulders and lifted him from the ground.
Briley Barnes, you little weasel.
Oh, no, Lola, please, deputy, you're not supposed to bother me.
You said you would show us around, Barnes. You don't want to hear about the vision I just had of you sailing against a brick wall, do you?
I wanted to show you fellas around, deputy, honest, but I didn't know how to find you.
Then aren't you glad I found you? Now we can start all over.
Inside the circle of rope on the floor, a big white man, his head shaved clean and wearing a broad handlebar mustache, pounded another man backward and out of the rope circle. The big man turned, facing the crowd with his fists raised in victory.
Sure, deputy, I'll still do it. Just put me down.
Hey, coaches! You can't take scalps in here!
Roth set Barnes back on the ground.
This is a private matter. I apologize for the disturbance.
Who let this engine in here?
I did, Mr. Lindsay. He says he's a fighter.
Is that true, Cochise? You're a pugilist, boy? If you are, you need to pick on somebody your own size. Don't go crippling Briley Barnes. He's my employee, in case you don't know it.
You're the man I came looking for, Mr. Lindsay. Maybe we can talk after the event?
You didn't answer me yet, boy! Are you a pugilist or not? If you're not, go sell your beads elsewhere. We're real busy here.
I'm a federal deputy, Mr. Lindsay. I'd really like to talk to you when you get a chance.
Roth stared straight ahead at Porter Lindsay as the big man walked toward him and stopped less than a foot away. Before Lindsay could say another word, 2-Jack Roth began shucking off his Navy coat. As he pitched it to the side, Porter Lindsay allowed himself a bemused half-smile.
Injun, you must be reading my mind.
Yes, and I'm getting a real bad vision, Lindsay. After I bat your head around, think we can talk some?
Oh, I'll talk. But you won't hear a word I'm saying, boy. What do you say? You ready to fight, Injun?
I'd love to, Paleface.
A straight blow from Roth's big hand seemed to come out of nowhere.
My name's Roth. Don't call me Injun. Oh.
Well, so we'll see some sport out of you after all.
Lindsay came up under his guard and launched a hard right to Roth's ribs. 2-Jack came back with a left-right combination. Roth stalked forward, not standing as straight now with the crushing pain in his wounded chest, but still coming. A roundhouse right snuck its way through Porter Lindsay's guard and sent him tottering sideways. But Lindsay collected himself quickly when Roth moved in and once more landed a powerful right up into Roth's ribs.
You need the bell, Roth? All right, then. Ring that blasted bell again, and I'll bend it over your head. Come on, Mr. Roth. Let's see what else you've got.
Both fighters staggered forward until they leaned against each other like trees in the aftermath of a terrible storm. They sank together to their knees in the center of the ring. Porter Lindsay managed to shove himself off 2-Jack Roth and summon enough strength to make a swing, but before his big swollen fist came around, Roth fell over on his side. Porter Lindsay rocked back and forth on his knees. Lindsay saw the bandaged gunshot wound on 2-Jack's chest just as the referee and three other men came in to drag Roth away and carry him to the alley out back.
Wait a minute. He's with me. You leave him alone.
Lindsay peered at Roth through his right eye. His left eye, nothing but a bloody slit in the purple, swollen flesh.
Why didn't you say something, Roth? I wouldn't fight a man in that shape.
Roth jerked his shirt tail down and covered the bandage. Lindsay reached down and helped 2-Jack up onto his knees.
I told you, I came to talk. You're a hard man to talk to.
Porter Lindsay looked all around.
Get us up from here. What the hell's wrong with you people? Get Mr. Roth some ice, some water.
It was close to midnight when the carriage pulled up out front of the station house. Sullivan Hart had been pacing back and forth on the limestone porch, out of the rain beneath the shelter of an overhang above the doors. He watched with curiosity as a big man with a battered, swollen face stepped out of the carriage into the rain, then turned and helped Roth out onto the sidewalk. Hart bounded down the limestone stairs through the gusts of rain.
My God, Roth, who did this to you?
We did it to each other. It's a long story.
Porter Lindsay looped Roth's arm across his shoulder and helped him across the sidewalk and up the stairs. Hart hurried ahead and opened the door for him.
This is Mr. Porter Lindsay. This is my partner I was telling you about, Sullivan Hart.
My pleasure, Hart. Rath told me what happened to your father and why you're here.
So you're Lindsay, of Hughes and Lindsay.
Yes, but I want you to know I have no part in this gang you're after. I told Roth everything I can about the laborers we've been sending out. That little rat Briley Barnes has been recruiting men for Midwest Investment. My partner, Hughes, probably knows what's going on, but not me. I'm more of a silent partner. It's been a place to stick some of my fight winnings.
It's the truth, Sully. He's given me a list of 6 new men they sent west just this morning to pick up a shipment of cargo in Missouri and head out with it. Destination unknown at present. Care to guess what the cargo's going to be?
Guns, to make up for the load we cost them.
That's what I figure. When you make a deal with the Federates, you better be able to keep your end of it.
Gentlemen, I hope I've helped. Given you those names and information, I'll be on my way now. You take care of yourself, Roth. Thanks for our gentleman's agreement.
What was that about?
He didn't want any of his cronies to know I was fighting him with a bullet wound in my chest. Must have thought it would make him look bad. How did it go with Quick Charlie Sims?
Well, from the looks of you and Lindsay, I'd say Sims and I got along real well. Him and Kate McCorkle are both upset about the judge using the money, but he's agreed to help us.
How did you handle it?
I told him the truth. He's a hard man to bluff. Besides, it turns out there's more behind all this than just the bank robbery and Creed being pinned on him. He's got something working with J.T. Priest from a long way back. I think it was Sims' folks Priest killed. The gypsies Barnes told us about. A band of gypsies are at the hospital today. Sims called them Roma. Said a gypsy never admits his vengeance, even to himself, if you can figure that out.
He means his vengeance is so deep it's become second nature to him. He doesn't dare think about it for fear it will cloud his vision of anything else. So why didn't he do something to Priest back when he had the chance? Back when they were in Colorado together?
Who knows? But if we're gonna catch up to the men in that cargo, we need to get a move on. Sims will have to wait here. That's okay with him, though. He feels like William Mabry's headed this way after him and the money.
Think one of us needs to stay here and wait for Mabry? Sims is in no shape to take care of himself.
Nah, we'll both have our hands full out there. I'll talk to Captain Bennington and make sure the police keep guarding him until he's on his feet. Besides, he has Kate McCorkle with him. Between the two of them, I'm sure they can hold their own.
Once back inside his brick building, Porter Lindsay saw that the door leading up the stairs to the offices of Hughes and Lindsay was not locked. He saw the glow of a lantern at the top of the stairs, and as he walked upward, he saw that the door to the offices stood partly open.
Hughes? Is that you, sport?
Yes, Porter. Come in. I thought perhaps you'd stay the night here rather than press home in the rain.
It's a terrible night, no question about it.
Yes, Porter. Terrible indeed.
Only then did Porter Lindsay turn slightly and see the faces of the three men step out of the shadows.
Now, what have you told that lawman about our business here?
Lindsay recognized two of the men, William Mabry and Briley Barnes. The third man had a red beard and held a cocked shotgun pointed at Porter Lindsay's stomach.
Nothing, Hughes. I gave the poor fellow a ride, dropped him off, and came right back here. What's the meaning of this? I won't be treated like some...
Shut up, big man. Barnes here was watching. Said the two of you were in this office. Then he followed your carriage to a tavern and saw the two of you have dinner together.
Barnes, you rat. What did you hope to gain by this? When these men are through with you, they'll serve you for breakfast.
Don't worry about Barnes. Barnes is doing all right for himself. What did you tell the lawman?
I told him everything I could think of about you, about your gang, about the six men we dispatched out this morning. I put the lawman right on your trail, Mabry. Now do what you will.
Lindsay jutted his chin as Mabry and Barnes stepped back a couple of feet. Mabry gave James Hughes a malevolent look.
He's lying, Mr. Mabry. I never told this stoop anything more than I had to. He knows nothing about your business. He's a ballroom brawler. All he knows is that we provide laborers for Midwest investment, nothing more.
Very well.
Then Mabry took another step back as if to leave and nodded at Red Loman.
For God's sake, Mabry, not here. Look at this mess. We'll never get it cleaned up.
Briley Barnes will see to it that you have nothing to worry about, Hughes. Do it, Briley boy.
Barnes lifted the pistol out from beneath his coat and aimed it at Hughes.
Mabry, please, no, I'm on your side.
Sorry, you know too much, Hughes. What are you waiting for, Briley boy? First time is always the hardest. There now, well done. The two of you put a torch to this place. Leave not a trace. I'll meet you back at my Pullman car.
What about the shipment of guns? Think we better head that way now that the law is onto it?
No. Phelps is paid to take care of that business. Let him handle it. I need the money that two-bit grifter Sims stole from J.T. Priest. Without it, I've got the government breathing down my neck. You're moving up fast, Briley boy. First thing in the morning, you're gonna show us to the hospital where Sims is staying. We'll get the money and kill that grifter. His lady friend, too. You can bet they're both in on it. Kill them both real slow for all the trouble they've caused me.
Two Jack Roth and Sullivan Hart met Captain Bennington in the hospital hallway the next morning on their way to Sims' room.
Good heavens, man. You look like you should be a patient instead of a visitor. Who did that to you? I'll arrest them for attempted murder.
It was only one person, Captain. I got involved in a sporting event with Porter Lindsay.
Yes, I heard. I only wanted to hear you say it. There was a fire before daylight this morning. Luckily, the rain was still falling hard, or we'd be rebuilding the city. The men's club where you fought Lindsay has been gutted, and so were the offices of Hughes and Lindsay. We found two charred corpses. No way of being certain, but I have a feeling it's the two of them.
I hope not. Porter Lindsay turned out to be a great help to us.
We have an arson investigation going on now. We'll have to see what we dig up.
Captain, I hope you're not going to tell us we can't leave town. We're headed out on the morning train. We put our horses on board on the way over here. Lindsay gave us a tip on some cargo being moved west. Sounds to us like a load of rifles.
No, I'm not saying you can't leave town. In fact, the sooner you get after these scoundrels, the better. Just wanted to see your reaction when you heard about the fire. It's my job.
We understand, Captain.
What about Sims and the woman? I hope Sims isn't traveling with you, is he?
Not right now. Can you keep some men watching over him and the woman? He thinks there's some trouble coming his way.
Don't worry about Sims. Whatever it takes, I'll make sure he's safe. I have a personal reason.
Oh?
Yes, I finally recalled where I'd heard the name Quick Charlie Sims before. Do you realize that man is a devil with a golf club in his hands?
I'm not real familiar with the game.
Nor am I.
Well, at any rate, Sims is highly respected among the golf set. In fact, last evening I spoke to the mayor. Our mayor is quite a golf enthusiast. He can't wait to meet Sims. Said he saw Sims play a few years ago in Yonkers, New York. So don't worry about Sims and Miss McCorkle. Unless they refuse it, they're under my protection.
Well, there you are. Sims and the mayor.
Maybe we need to take up that game, golf. It seems to open a lot of doors.
I've thought about it, just can't seem to find the time.
Inside his room, Quick Charlie Sims lay on his side, dealing a hand of blackjack to Kate McCorkle.
I need to get in shape to be in Fort Smith when J.T. Priest makes his escape.
What makes you so sure J.T. Priest is going to make a break quick, Charlie?
Sims looked up from flipping another card onto Kate's hand.
Good morning to you too, deputies. Call it intuition, Sully. 22, Kate, you busted.
How do you know that?
Sims didn't answer her. Instead, he riffled the deck, fanned it, then closed it and dropped it on the bed, looking up at Hart.
If you were in Priest's shoes, wouldn't you be trying to break out? Besides, as large as this gang is, who knows? Might be a couple of other Los Pistoleros in that jail on other charges. If so, they'll either cut his throat or help him escape. What do you think?
We came to tell you we got a tip on some of the gang moving some cargo. We're heading west to catch up to them. You can join us as soon as you're able to travel.
A tip, huh? Is it a shipment of rifles trying to make up for the ones they lost in the fire?
You already knew about it, then why didn't you tell us?
Easy, Hart. I didn't already know about it. It just makes sense. They don't want to lose their Federates business, not with Marbury needing the cash the way he's bound to.
Sullivan Hart looked from Sims to Kate McCorkle, and in doing so saw the hickory shaft of a golf club leaning against the oak stand beside the bed. Shaking his head, he reached over and picked it up.
Let me guess, Sims, a golf club. Captain Lowell Bennington's, right?
He asked me to take a look at it. Says it doesn't feel just right to him. What could I say?
Bennington told us the mayor wants to meet you, Sims. You seem to be making your share of new friends here.
Yeah, that's what Bennington told me. I thought that was interesting. The mayor, of all people.
I'm sure you've already heard about the fire at Hughes and Lindsay being so close to the captain and all.
Yeah, Bennington mentioned something about it. Hoo-wee, Roth. Looks like this Porter Lindsay made quite an impression on you two, Jack.
Are you paying attention here, Sims?
Oh, yes. My chips are in the pot. I want you to do me one favor, though. Take Kate with you. Get her out of here.
No, you don't. I'm not leaving you here alone. You can't even walk yet without falling.
Kate, it could get real dangerous here. I want you out of it.
He's right, man. Why don't you go with us? The police will watch after him. Come on.
I'm free, right? No charges against me? So I'm the one who decides where I'll be and who I'll be with. I'm not going anywhere, so there.
She's got a point, Sims. You can't get around yet. You're not armed. Even if you were, you won't shoot anybody.
Where'd you get that notion, Sully?
She told us all about it, Sims. Maybe it's best she stays with you.
All right, Sully. I'm too weak to argue with her. You two get going. I'll join you as soon as I can make the trip.
Good enough, then. I'll see you in Fort Smith.
I won't shoot anybody? Where on earth did you come up with that?
Well, what was I supposed to do, Charlie? For all I knew, they might have shot you down like a dog when they caught up to you. I made it up. Evidently, they believed it.
Well, who else have you told that to?
Just Deputy Hart on the train coming here. He mentioned it later to Roth, and that Briley Barnes character might have heard it, I think. Why? What's the big deal? You've said so yourself, you never want to be looked at as a big hard case.
That's true. Ah, dear Kate, you never cease to amaze me.